If the third time doesn't work, then it's... I'm just... Well, as I said, good evening, everyone. We're starting a new Bible study here tonight, and we're actually talking about something. The subject that we, as you see there up on the screen, is we're actually going to talk about not things that are in the Bible, but things that are not in the Bible. Okay, and this was a series I did a few months back at STSA, and it was a series that's been on my mind for the longest time to want to do, a series about things that Jesus never said, because I found that oftentimes we think certain things are in the Bible, and we kind of make certain statements that we think sound Christian and they sound Jesus-like, but if we, upon further study, we discover that they're not actually in the Bible. And as I, before I begin this, I thought of a perfect story that I should open here with here, and that was when I saw Abuna Demetrius. Every time I see Abuna Demetrius, he always says the same thing to me. He always says to me, "Our Father, who art in Arlington." Every time I see him, he says, "Our Father, who art in Arlington." So let me tell you a little story about how sometimes we believe things and we say things that aren't actually true. Okay, and I was recently in, I was in Toronto last week, and someone came to me in Toronto. I got there like, I was there Thursday, Friday. And someone came to me and said, earlier this week, Bishop Karras was here, and he told me to come and introduce myself to you and ask you to tell me the Our Father story. Okay, so this has become a world-famous story that I'll share with you guys right now. It was once upon a time, I was in a city called Brighton, and that's in England. Anyone ever been to Brighton? Anyone know anything about Brighton? Any family in Brighton? Okay, so yeah, from over there. So what do we know about Brighton, all right, is that it's a big, huge church, okay, and lots of people, but the vast majority of them speak Arabic, not English. Okay, and I was there on a two-week trip with a group of people, and we were just there to spend 2 weeks, and we were supposed to, like, go do a revival in the church and whatever it may be. Anyway, that's not the part of the story. We get to the church in Brighton, and it's my first Sunday. I think we arrived on, like, a Friday or Saturday. All right, so I started to get to know some of the people, and then here comes Sunday, and it's time for the sermon on Sunday. So I assume they're going to ask me to preach, so I'm ready to preach, but whatever. I'm ready to not preach. I'm always happy to sit when others are standing. It's fine. And then they come to me just before, you know, the sermon a little bit and say, the priest says, you give the sermon. So I do the obligatory no, 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 you, and then, but in, that's fine. Okay, sure, no problem. Like 2 minutes before I'm about to go up, like during the gospel reading, the priest comes to me and says, oh, by the way, make sure you speak in Arabic. And I said, good one. He said, no, you have to speak Arabic. I said, I can't speak Arabic. He said, well, they can't understand English. I'm like, then someone else give the sermon. He said, no, you have to give the sermon. I'm like, I can't speak English. I can't speak Arabic. They don't understand English. It makes sense that someone who speaks their language would give the sermon. He said, no, you have to give the sermon. So here I am. I have to go give the sermon. And I'm forced, and I can't do the thing back to him, so I'm up there. The gospel of that particular Sunday was Matthew chapter 6. So it was about the Lord's Prayer. Okay, and I wanted to communicate the following message. That when Jesus gave us the Lord's Prayer, he told us to pray our Father. Not just the Father or Father, but our Father. And the whole point of my sermon was like Jesus personalized it. And he didn't say that God is just a Father or the Father or whatever, but he personalized it. And Jesus is our Father. Jesus is my Father. And I wanted to emphasize the importance of the word our in the Lord's Prayer. It's called Our Father. It's two words, Our and Father. What's it called in Arabic? Abana and Lezi. So in my mind, Abana means Father, and Lezi means Our. It's logic. Our Father, Abana Lezi. Okay, every language, it's two words. Like in Spanish, you know what it say, Our Father in Spanish? Padre Nuestro. Padre is Father, Nuestro is Our. Logic. Our Father, Abana Lezi. So I'm up there. And I'm saying, how many people here don't understand Arabic? How many people understand Arabic if I say it in Arabic? Okay, it's the majority. I'll translate for those who don't. Is that I'm up there and I'm saying this. I'm like, Rabbina Mishbes Abana? Hua Abana Lazik? I said, Kill my Lazi, the Bohem Awik! And I'm screaming and I'm going crazy and I'm, Lazik! And you're not a Christian if you don't understand Lazik! For those who don't know, Lezi means who art. Abana, which is one word, means our father. So Arabic has to be cool and not say the our father. It has to be the our father who art. That's the name of the prayer. I did not know this. So here I am giving this sermon. And I am like, okay, I'm getting into this thing. This is, and I'm going all out. I'm just emphasizing it. What are the people doing as I'm saying it? Oh, he's right. You know what? I never thought of that. It's a good point. And the people are as if I'm saying something deeply profound. So I learned something at that moment in time. Of course, when we got back to the room, all the American people who were with me laughed hysterically at me and explained to me. And of course, I was saying, why didn't somebody raise their hand? Okay, because obviously, but anyway. I learned something that day. I learned something that day. And that's the premise of our series here right now. Which is that we will pretty much believe whatever we want to believe. And it is very easy for us to make up stuff. And I spoke with authority about Lezi is the defining characteristic of a Christian versus a pagan. And everyone said, yes. If you don't believe in who art, yes. And everyone bought it. And I believe that we as Christians, it's very easy for us to make stuff up and to build an entire theology and an entire relationship with God around things that aren't actually true. And what I want to do here tonight and over the coming weeks is talk about some of those things and debunk some of those things and shoot some of those things down. Because the things that we say, they sound very nice, they sound very spiritual, they sound like they should be in the Bible, but the bottom line is a lot of things are just simply art. For example, God helps those who help themselves. We've heard that before, right? It says it somewhere in the Bible, somewhere in the back probably. God will never give you more than you can handle. We've said that one, right? Someone in a tough time, someone going through a difficult situation, don't worry, God will never give you more than you can handle. How about the picture when we go to visit someone's house, okay, the picture of Jesus that's in everyone's house that says, when I forgive, I forget. Never said once in the Bible. We'll take some of these and we'll break some of these down week by week. But the one that I want to talk about here today is one that you may not have verbally said, but I bet you when I put it up there on the screen, you will think that is certainly in the Bible because we often live this way. And that is this. Follow me and I will give you the desires of your heart. I won't ask for a show of hands of how many people have said that, have thought that, have told that to other people. Follow me, and there's variations of it. Follow me and I'll give you the desires of your heart. Wait on the Lord and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Trust in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Like, all these are different variations of the same thing. Are you sure that's not in the Bible? Even if it's not in the Bible, doesn't it sound like it should be in the Bible? Like, it sounds very spiritual, right? Like, didn't Jesus say, ask, and you will get or receive, okay? Seek, and you will find. Like, didn't Jesus say, whatever you ask in my name? So, it kind of sounds like something that's right. Follow me, do my will, do what I'm asking you to do, be spiritual, make sure you say your prayers, do your fasting, do everything right, and I will give you the desires of your heart. From the bottom of my heart, I wish that I could tell you that's a true statement. Nothing would make me happier as a priest than to be able to say it. I'd be happy because it would mean I could get whatever I want, and I'd be happy because it would make you happy and make me a very popular priest if I go around and preach that just do the right thing and God will give you whatever it is you want. But there are some fatal flaws with this logic, and just at a very basic level. I have a tremendous desire in my heart, as we speak, for ice cream. And that desire for ice cream, I have prayed that it would go away and has never gone away. I have asked God to remove it and has never gone away. Does that mean that the desire, the fact that it's there, means that God has to give it and I should fulfill it? Or maybe I'm supposed to control it? How about sexual desires? Can I say, I'm a married man, but I have sexual desires for other women, so therefore, if that desire is there, boom. Can I say that just because a desire exists within inside me, I have a desire to be rich, And I've asked God to take it away. He hasn't taken it away. So therefore, I have the right to become as rich and famous and powerful as I want to be. Can we say that just because we have a desire, that God owes it to us? If we fast enough, if we pray enough, if we go to church enough, if we do enough, then whatever the desire is in my heart, then God has to give it to me? You can see how this would get into problems. I'm single. I want to be married. I'm trusting that if I do everything right, then God has to give me what I want. I'm married. I want to have children. God has closed that door, but he knows it's the desire of my heart, so he has to give me a child this year. Saying that whatever we desire, God has to give us, turns God from our Father who art in heaven and turns him into our vending machine who art on earth. What I call this, I'm going to call this the theology of happiness. Okay, the theology of happiness says the following, that whatever makes you happy must be from God. Okay, and I want to break down this theology of happiness, which basically says that God is here to make us happy, and you know you struggle with this or you're falling into this if you have said any one of the three following sentences I'm about to say, okay? Again, there'll be variations of it. First, whatever makes me happy must be right. Whatever makes me happy must be right. Therefore, if I am single, but I'm dating this girl or dating this boy, and we want to do bad stuff together, and it makes us happy, and it just feels right, therefore God understands. Because it makes me feel right, and God would never want me to feel not right. God would never want me to feel not happy. If it makes me happy, it must be right. If it makes me unhappy, it must be wrong. I would go there. I would take that job. See, God put this job in front of me, but I don't want to do it because I have this dream that I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be as irresponsible as I want to be with my career because I don't feel happy in this job. If I'm happy, it's right. If I'm not happy, it must be wrong. Theology of happiness. Number two, anything that is against my happiness, any obstacle, is obviously from the devil and spiritual warfare. So if I want this relationship and the relationship is breaking apart at the seams and it's a disaster and everyone is against it, those people are from the devil and spiritual warfare. And my mother doesn't understand and my father doesn't understand and my brother and sister don't understand. It's spiritual warfare because it's against my happiness. Number three, if you fall for number one and two, you may not ever say this, but I guarantee you that you live it. You don't worship God. Ultimately, we worship God. We worship ourselves and our happiness. We come up with a happiness plan, okay? And this is what it's going to take to make me happy. And then all of a sudden, everything revolves around this, the happiness plan. And I bow to this, and I serve this, and we never say this with our mouth, but we make God bow to that as well. And we make God the servant, and our happiness the master. And we turn the creator into the servant. This would never be us, right? This would never be us. We would never fall into this. Well, have you ever thought or said anything like the following? You know you struggle with the vending machine theology. If you say something or you find yourself thinking something along the following lines. Don't you know God? Dot, dot, dot. Don't you know God that? Don't you know God that I really, really want this? Don't you know God that I really, really need this? Don't you know, God, that I'm turning 30 this year? Don't you know, God, that everyone else around me is getting married and I'm not? Don't you know, God, that I need this promotion? Don't you know, God, that I can't live without giving me a child who's healthy? Don't you know, God, that my life is going to stink unless you take away this illness? Don't you know, God, shows that you have flipped the servant-master relationship. Or, I'll give you another one. Maybe sometimes we go to church and then we fall away from church. And I've heard this before, and maybe you've heard it before, maybe you've said it before. And then someone say, hey, come back to church, or why don't you come to church? And then you'll say something like the following, or you'll hear something like the following. I've heard this before. You know what? I tried church, and it didn't work. You ever heard that? I tried church, and it didn't work. You should pray. No, I tried to pray, and it didn't work. You should trust in God. No, I tried God. It didn't work. See, I was unhappy. I tried God. I'm still unhappy. So with or without God, no difference. I had this big problem, and I tried the church thing, and I went to church every single day for an entire week. We call it Holy Week, and I went every single day. You know the Holy Week people who come out of the woodwork, okay? And just, I have this, so here's Holy Week, and I need this. I tried it, and it didn't work. And there's so many people out there here's your problem if you follow happiness theology. Here's your problem. You're going to come into one of two problems. You're going to come into one of two problems. If you believe that God promised to give you all your desires if you do good, you come into one of two problems. Either number one, God is a liar. And God forbid. That God is a liar. That God said something and didn't come through on it. Or number two, God is not a liar. But then the problem is, you are bad. And that you don't deserve God. And that you are, all of these promises are true, 100% true. I'll give you the desires of your heart, they're true. But they're not true for you because you're bad. Or because you sinned. And yes, I know I said I forgive you, but I don't really forgive you. And I'm going to hold it over your head for the rest of your life. There's the problem with happiness theology. If you believe something that's not true, either God's at fault or you're at fault. And either way is a bad solution. Maybe there's a third option. Maybe the third option is that we misunderstood the promise of God. Maybe the promise of God is there, something about the desires of our heart, and we'll see that in a second. But maybe we misunderstood what the promise meant. So before we get to the verse that sounds like give you the desires of your heart, or that we think is referring to, let's look at a couple other verses and see what is God's desire for us. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 15 says, "As he who called you is happy, you also be happy in all your conduct. Because it is written, be happy, for I am happy." Is that what it says? Be happy, for the Lord your God is a happy God. I'm not saying that God is against our happiness. I'm not saying that in the least way. I actually believe that God wants us to be happy. I believe that is a great desire for his heart. But I just believe that it's not the number one desire. I believe that there's something higher. And I believe that happiness is a great goal. But there's a lot of stuff that's much higher. And at the top of the list is holy. Now, I'm not going to stick with this word holy too long because I think we misinterpreted this word holy and it has a bad connotation. But if we understood what holy really meant, then it would be very easy for us to see that God's desire is happy, but holy is greater. And I'll give you an easy example. My kids right now, each of them plays soccer, right? And just last week, one of the kids scored a goal, okay? And when they score the goal, you have kids playing soccer, you know that scoring a goal in soccer is like winning a gold medal, okay? It is the greatest thing in the whole world, especially when your team gets beaten 15-2 every game, okay? You get one of those two and you were just on cloud nine because you got nothing else to rejoice over. Kids scored a goal. All right, kid scored a goal, and you could see as soon as the kid scored a goal, made straight eye contact with me, okay, because we coach him up and we try to like work on different things, and they were so happy and looking at me like, give me approval, and I was so happy. I wasn't happy because I cared about the goal. I couldn't care less about the goal, but what made me happy was that my child was happy. Their happiness makes me happy. I want them happy. That is a high goal for me, and I would say, if you ask me, my will for the game this Saturday is more goals. That's my will. I desire goals for my children. Everyone agree? Let's say after the goal. Okay, let's say after the goal. Let's say my daughter scores a goal. And then on the way back, she gets a thumbs up from dad. Then she goes to the opposing team and she's like, boom, 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 boom. Okay? And she starts taunting them. And she starts giving them salutes with certain fingers. Okay? And she's like, in your face, yeah! Did my will for her change a little bit there? Do I still desire her to get a goal this Saturday? All of a sudden, her happiness about the goal is secondary to me. There's a higher issue, which is her behavior, her holiness. And the fact that she threw this away, then all of a sudden, this becomes a lot less important to me. Is that easy to understand for everybody? God wants us to be happy. But if it's at the sake of our holiness, then I'll be honest with you, I couldn't care less if she scores another goal all year. I don't even care if she's on the soccer team, if that's how she's going to behave. Because happiness is a goal, but there's a higher goal. Holy is the right word, but I'm not going to use the word holy. Because we have messed up the word holy. And we think of holy equals miserable. Okay, that's how we have defined holy. Holy, we made it the opposite of happy, and we made holy equals miserable. Happy people are this, and holy people are this. Happy people smile and make noise and whatever, and holy people are always depressed. And you say, how are you? And they say they're miserable, okay? And they so get rid of the word holy. Even though the word holy is right, I want to give you a different word that we've also kind of misinterpreted, but it's easier to see. I'm going to say God wants us to be happy, but more than happy, he wants us to be blessed. And I want to go back to the original meaning of the word blessed. And again, blessed, we've messed this word up because some people define blessed in a very earthly, happy way. Blessed equals I get the promotion. Blessed equals I win the lottery. Blessed means that I win the girl. Blessed means that the girl leaves me alone. Like, you can define blessed however it is that you want. But if that's your definition of blessed, to have whatever you want in the moment, how do you then interpret when Jesus said, blessed are those who are hungry. Blessed are those who are thirsty. Blessed are those who are persecuted. Blessed are you when people hate you. How do you define blessed if you limit it to short-term happiness and then interpret those verses? Clearly the word blessed, the way we mean it, meaning prosperity now, is not the same way Jesus said it and meant it when he said, blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and say all kinds of things against you for my sake. So what does blessed mean? Blessed comes from a Greek word makarios, and the Greek word makarios can be defined as supremely blessed when God extends his benefits, or this is what one I like so much, seeing the hand of God visibly in your life. That's what blessed means. It means supremely blessed, okay, which is, I know, is defining a word by itself, okay, but that's fine. When God extends his benefits, or seeing the hand of God visibly in life. I have my own working definition, okay? I'll give you an easier to remember definition, which is just my own invention, okay? But I like it. Blessed doesn't mean happy. Blessed means more than happy. Meaning, you can be happy when you're full, but when you're hungry, you can be more than happy. You can be happy when people speak well of you, but you can be more than happy when people don't speak well of you. That's a tough one. Let me break that one down. Can anyone think of an example of a great saint from the Bible or not from the Bible? All throughout history, there are many examples of saints who wanted something and said, this is the desire of my heart. Said another way, they didn't say it this way, this would make me happy. And then God said, no, I will not make you happy. I will make you more than happy. Anyone think of any examples? Abraham, how? Okay, with the son. Okay, that's a good example. More, because that was kind of like a moment in time, but someone maybe who lived an extended period of not happy, but more than happy. Huh? St. Paul, how? Okay, very good. St. Paul is a great example. Let's come back to St. Paul, because I have a verse about St. Paul, but let's see if there's other examples, but that's the best one. Other examples. Can we think of, there's a lot of them. Joseph. Okay, Joseph is a great example. Joseph, thrown into a well by his brothers. I never heard anyone pray and say, Lord, is the desire of my heart to be thrown into a well by my brothers. Okay, that's not the desire of his heart. And if you ask Joseph, as they're picking him up and throwing him in the well, is probably say, the desire of my heart is to have wings. Desire of my heart is for this thing to be cushioned at the bottom. Desire of my heart is for all those guys to go away and leave me alone. That's the desire of my heart. And God said, well, I'm actually not going to give you the desire of your heart. I'm actually not going to make you happy. But Joseph, I will make you more than happy. And Joseph said that at the very end of his life. Y'all meant evil against me, but God used it for good to bring it about this day salvation for many people. More than happy. Who else? Anybody else? Who we celebrate these days? Just look around. Go ask any of the martyrs. Go ask any of the martyrs. Did God make them happy? You know the thing about all the martyrs? They all got killed. So sometimes they were more than happy, but they got killed. And they didn't just get killed, they got tortured. Okay, they got tortured, and no one ever said, like, we read some of those stories of the Synaxarium, like, some of those things are, those are brutal things. No one ever said, like, it is my great desire to have the stretching machine. There's a machine called a stretching machine. Okay, tie it up right over here, someone pull left, someone pull right, and literally pull a person apart. No one said, this is the desire of my heart to make this happen to me. But God didn't give them the desire, God gave them more than their desire. All right, St. Paul. Come back to St. Paul. St. Paul had a thorn in the flesh. And what did St. Paul say in his own words happened? What did he do when he found that thorn in the flesh? What did he do? Did he say, thank you, God? He prayed how many times? Three times. What does it mean when it says he prayed three times? Does that mean he just said, please, God, remove this flesh, our Father who art in heaven? Please, God, bless this food and remove the flesh, our Father. What does it mean to say he prayed three times? It doesn't mean three prayers. It means three seasons of prayer. It means that St. Paul said today, you know what? God, I'm sick and tired of this thorn in the flesh, and I'm going to dedicate these next 3 months I'm going to fast, I'm going to pray, and I'm going to do everything right, and I'm going to spend all night vigil prayer that you would remove this thorn in the flesh. A season of prayer. And at the end of it, the answer was, Paul, I will not give you the desire of your heart. And then he did it again a year later, 2 years later, and then again a third time. And every time, St. Paul said, the desire of my heart is to remove this thorn in the flesh. God said, St. Paul, I will not give you the desire of your heart. I will give you better than the desire of your heart. I will not make you happy. I will make you more than happy. And St. Paul speaks about that in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. He said, therefore, we do not lose heart. Even though our outward man is perishing, not happy, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day, more than happy. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, not happy, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory, more than happy. So what I'm trying to say is this, is every one of us, I hope you have an example in your life, I certainly have examples in my life, where I can think to a time where I really, really, really wanted something, and I said, this is exactly what I need, this is what's going to make me happy, this is what I need. And then I don't get it. And I say, thank you, God, that was the best thing that ever happened. Or the opposite, where I said, God, this is the worst thing that ever happened, and please, God, get this thing away from me, and I hate this thing. And thank you, God, for this thing. You have examples in your life? Earlier today, just today, work of God. I was visiting a couple who just had a baby. Okay, probably no one here knows them. Visiting a couple who just had a baby. This couple tried many times to have a baby. Many, 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 many times to have a baby. Every time, didn't work, miscarriage, like many, many times. They had pretty much given up. They did the monastery, the papers on the thing, and like they did everything. They did everything. Finally, God somehow opened it through one of these things, and they were able to, but it was a rocky pregnancy. Rocky, 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 rocky. And many times I thought they were going to lose the baby. And the mother started to develop different diseases. And don't ask me what the name of them are, but there was one disease, okay, the one that I remember, okay, that's the vivid one, is like half her face became paralyzed. Okay, it's some kind of virus, something like that. I don't know if anyone knows what it's called. Something bad. Half her face became paralyzed. She hit 37 weeks this past week, and she was going to the doctor for a checkup on this thing. Okay, and while they were there, they said, you know what, maybe we should induce the baby, whatever it may be. And she said, well, I'd rather wait until, but they convinced her, okay, let's see how it goes and try to induce the baby. They spent probably 24 hours trying to induce the baby, and the baby wasn't coming. So finally they said, you know what, let's give up, and let's, you know, come back another time or something like that. Because of this thing that happened to her face, okay, which they were not happy with this thing, okay? Because of this thing that happened to their face, the doctor said, you know what? This is too risky. Because of this thing, we need to go in there and we need to get this baby out, even if we have to do C-section. She said, no C-section, but they said, we need to check. They investigated the situation further. Long story short, the baby had the umbilical cord wrapped around its neck two times, okay? Two times, and her placenta had been leaking, okay? And they would have never, ever known this had it not been for that disease that she had that made the doctors check on her and refuse to let her go because it was too risky to leave with this disease. Today, from their own, the baby was just born yesterday. Today, from their own mouth, they said the disease, the best thing that ever happened to us. The disease, the best thing that ever happened to us. Did God make them happy? No. Okay, like I said, half her face, she can't, like is paralyzed. Hopefully it goes away, but I'm saying we don't know. I'm saying half her face, she can't. And all the complications she had to take off, like it was a really rough situation. Did God make them happy? No. What did God do? He made them more than happy. And the baby's so cute, and the baby's so beautiful, and the baby's the most beautiful baby in the whole wide world. Okay, and it wouldn't have been that beautiful baby had it not been for that disease, for that sickness. Let me give you a Bible verse that says the same thing. Proverbs 16:25. I hope you believe this. I believe this to be true about my own life. I hope you do as well. There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Have you experienced that verse? I certainly have, and I bet you have if you think about it too. There's a way that seems right. There's a way that seems like it'll make us happy, that seems like it's the right choice, that seems like it's the thing that we need, but its end is the way of death. This verse is counter to our culture, because the culture that we live in today, the society we live in today, says if you want it, you go get it. We're the only culture in the world, in the history of the world, civilization, that you can have $0 and buy whatever you want. And you laugh and we say, if you think about that for a second, you don't need money to buy a car. Zero down, 0% financing, you want it today, you walk out of here today. the only culture in the world that you don't need money to buy stuff. That's our society. Our society says, you want it, it makes you happy, go for it. Hey, you're single, she loves you and you love her and y'all are in love and love and love and love and love, and it, do your best not to have sex before marriage. But if it feels like it, okay, just try your best to only do it once or twice. And if you can, just try your best to be safe and don't let anybody know and get married before you do it. Our happiness theology gets us in trouble all the time, and we need to make sure that that does not creep into us. And the bad news is, the longer you're in church, I believe, the more susceptible you are to this. The longer you're in church, the more susceptible you are to this, to believing that God owes you something just because you did good. Now, as I kind of alluded to earlier, there is a verse in the Bible that kind of sounds like, follow me and I'll give you the desires of your heart. Isn't there? Does anyone know what that verse is? Anybody other than Abuna? Okay, very good. Lydia, it's Psalm 37:4, which sounds very similar to what I'm saying is does not say. It says, delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Now you say, hey, wait a minute, Father Anthony, like, you've been really nitpicky here. You're saying it doesn't say, follow me and I'll give you the desires of your heart. It says, delight yourself. Like, isn't that just like a translation thing? Like, isn't it just like you say tomato, I say tomato? Like, some people just translate it differently? Like, what's the difference between what you're saying and what the verse is saying? Okay, well, two things. All right, and forgive me here, I'm kind of a literalist, right, when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I don't, like, I think every word has significance, and we don't overlook words, and we don't overlook context. There's two things that we need to investigate, we need to go deeper on right here. First thing is the word delight. That's the key to the verse, okay? We understand the desires of your heart. What does delight mean? So we're going to have to look at that. What does delight mean? But there's another word in there that makes me put a question mark and makes me say, hey, wait a minute, I have to investigate this a little bit further. I can't take this at face value. What's that other word? Yourself. Also. Because also means what, Matt? It means there's something else. Like if I walked in, you just walked in and I said, and also, and then whatever I said, you would automatically assume that I said something before that was connected to this. So you can't just come in and say, and also, without reading what happened before. So here's what we'll do. We'll come back to the word delight, because the word delight is very important. But before we get to delight, let's read the context. Let's read all of Psalm 37 and see what is around this verse. Because this verse, we want to interpret it to say, be good, God will give you everything that you need. Be good, and God will give you whatever it is that you want, whatever makes you happy. That's what we want this to say. What does the rest of the psalm say? Let's read Psalm 37. And you tell me the picture being painted by Psalm 37. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of workers of iniquity. For they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Pause right there. That's verse 1. What? Right off the bat, verse 1, what words jump out at you? What's going on in the life of King David as he's writing this? What's going on around him? Evildoers, envious, worker of his iniquity, and what emotion is King David feeling right now as he's reciting these words? Fret. How do you know? Because it's do not fret. Like if I come to you and say, Matthew, don't be scared. Okay, then you automatically assume he's scared. Okay, like, and he's not happy and I say, don't be scared. Okay, like, do not fret means that King David is a little concerned right now because there's evildoers, there's workers of iniquity, there's bad guys all around him. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Okay, skip verse 4. We'll come back to verse 4. Commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. What do you think it is? Do you think it is good or bad? It's got to be bad. Can't be good. There's evildoers, there's workers of iniquity, trust in God, do not fret, it'll pass. So right off the bat, it doesn't sound like this is a happy-go-lucky, God will give you whatever it is that you want verse. It sounds like the psalmist saying, trust in God, he's going to come through, even if there's bad around you now, he's going to come through. Am I making this up? Does everyone else see what I see? Just continue. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light, your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret, it only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Leave aside verse 4. Someone summarize this to me. What is the psalm saying in one sentence or in one phrase? What is it saying to you? Okay, do not fret, but finish it. Finish the thought. It's not just saying simply do not fret in a bad way. It's saying what? Do not fret, this will pass. Stay the course, this will pass. Whatever bad may be happening, God will come through in the end. Do not fret, do not panic, trust in God. Does everyone agree? Does anyone disagree with my interpretation of this? Like, I'm not saying I'm right, I could be wrong, but that's how I interpret it. Now we go back to verse 4. If that is what it means, that do not fret, do not panic, God will come through in the end, not everything is going good around you, but God will come through, how do we then interpret delight yourself in the Lord? What does the word delight mean to you? Anyone want to guess? It's a tough word, huh? Okay. Okay, that's a good start. Anyone else? What does delight mean to you? You read this verse in your quiet time tomorrow morning. What does delight mean to you? Say what? Find joy. Okay, that's a good one. Someone, I heard another one. Indulge. What does that mean? Okay. Consume yourself. I like that. Someone else had a hand up there? Sorry? Enjoy. Okay, very good. Someone else? Go ahead. Please yourself. Okay. And trust. Okay. Let me read you what the Hebrew word, which is translated delight, it comes from the Hebrew word anog, and it means the following. It means literally to become soft or pliable. To become soft or pliable. Delicate with enjoyment. What's that mean? The picture being created right here by delight yourself in the Lord is something malleable, pliable, soft in the hands of its maker. The best thing that I can do to try to paint a picture, an analogy for you, okay? What word did you say? You said, what was the word you said? Find joy. Y'all ever seen an engaged couple? An engaged couple. Okay, is anyone here engaged? Someone? Yes? Congratulations, okay. So other than Marina, okay, this does not apply to Marina, okay? But let me tell you what we hate about engaged couples. Other than Marina, okay? What we hate about them. Engaged, how do normal people walk? Normal people walk like this, okay? How do engaged couples walk? They look up, and you see them, and you're like, what, am I missing something? Engaged couples, traditionally, you have a guy who likes to play video games, who likes to watch TV, who likes to make bodily noises when he's hanging out with his friends, and then all of a sudden he gets engaged. He doesn't like to do those things anymore. Now he likes to skip. Okay? And now he likes to go shopping. And now he likes to hold purses. Okay? Or whatever it may be. Same thing with the ladies. Okay? The lady before engagement, you know, she... I don't know. What a girl. Go to church. Like, I don't know. I grew up with brothers only. Okay? I don't know. Girls... Whatever girls like to do, let's stick with the guys, because it's a little bit easier example for me, okay? But then what happens? They fall in love, which we hate that word, fall in love. We throw that word away because that means nothing. Okay, that's a Walt Disney creation. We don't like that word. What they do is they delight in one another. And when they delight in one another, they change. And sometimes we would say, as the single people, for the worse, okay? They would say for the better. That's not our subject here for tonight, all right? But they change. And the things that they liked before, they don't like anymore. And the things that they desired before, they don't desire anymore. They desire something new. And what they desire is 100% connected to the person that they delight themselves in or that they are about to marry. So with that said, delight yourself in the Lord means the following. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. It means that God doesn't want to give us our desires. He wants to change our desires to be His desires. God doesn't want to just give us our desires. He wants to change our desires to be His desires. What does that mean? That means you desire, you're married, you desire children. And God sees that desire. But there's a point that you can reach where you desire God so much and you delight in God so much, not that your desire for children goes away, but your desire for His desire supersedes your desire. Does that make sense? Not that you don't desire to be rich anymore, or you don't desire a big house anymore, but your desire to serve His desire becomes a greater desire for you. And I say, that's kind of complicated. No, I'll make it real simple for you. As a married man, I'll tell you, this makes perfect sense to me. That there are many things that I desire in life. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not just saying this. My wife isn't even listening to this, but I'll tell you the honest truth. Making my wife happy makes me more happy than making me happy. Making my wife happy makes me more happy than making me happy. I'd be happy playing video games, playing basketball, hanging out. I'd be happy doing those things. My wife hates those things. So I am more than happy when I am not happy, but she is happy. So it's not that my desire went away. It's that I have a greater desire. And this desire is here. Like I said, my desire for ice cream, my desire for whatever it may be is still there. But I have a desire that is greater than that desire, and that's what delight yourself in the Lord means. One last analogy, make it clear, and then I'll see if anyone wants to add anything on top of it. Imagine you go to the beach. Imagine you go to the beach. Okay, what does it mean to delight yourself in the Lord? He shall give you the desires of your heart. Imagine you go to the beach. And at the beach, you see people having a good time. All right, people relaxing, people kicking back, people drinking a cold one, like people having a great time, listening to music, like having a fun time. And then in the ocean, there's a fish. And the fish is swimming around living a pretty boring life. So that fish says, I want to live on the land. That'll make me more happy. You, fish asks you, or fish says to you, I want to go live on the land. I'll be more happy there. They look more happy there than I am here. Can a fish ever be happy on land? Why not? Everyone else is happy on the land. Okay, what if I gave the fish $1 million? I told the fish to come on the land, and I said, here's $1 million. Would that make the fish happy? What if I gave the fish a big fancy job? Would that make the fish happy? We gave him a big house, a big fish house, okay, that he could live on. And I gave him a nice car, and I gave him, like, he was the most popular fish on all the land. Would that make him happy? Humor me here. I know I'm being dumb, but humor me. Why would it not make him happy? Because he can't live. Because he wasn't made to live on the land. He's made to live in the ocean. And if I take a fish out of the water, and I give the fish $1 million, he's going to die. And if I give him $2 million, he's still going to die. And if I make him the fish king and queen, he's still going to die. And if I give him a big fish house, he's going to die. Because a fish is not made to live on land. Fish can only live in water. Agree? Did you know that you were not made to live on this land as well? You were not made to live on this land. You were made to live in another land. Galaxy far, far, far away. And we're here for a little bit of time. And we do our best to be comfortable. There's nothing wrong with that. And we buy a house. There's nothing wrong with that stuff. But let's not fool ourselves. Let's not get fooled by thinking that we were made to live on this land. Forgive me for what I'm about to say. But we're a little bit hypocrites here. We're a little bit hypocrites. Because every time we stand together to pray on Sundays, and we recite the creed, in a loud voice, we love the creed. How does the creed finish? We recite the whole creed, and we say it like we're meaning business. We believe in one God, God the Father, the Pentecost, and we... And then we get to the end. And we stop. and we sing the end. What do we sing? We sing, we look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the age to come. There's a little bit of hypocrisy here. There's a little bit of hypocrisy here because by looking at the way many of us live, it is hard to tell that we actually do look for the age to come. It is hard to tell that we look for the resurrection of the dead and we are awaiting the life to come because it really, really looks like we are awaiting life here on this earth. And it really, really looks like we want the kingdom to be right here and right now. And what I want to say to you out of my love for every single one of you, I'm not saying this out of judgment, I promise you, we've all been there, I'm saying this out of love, is that we need to lower our expectations of life on this earth. We need to lower our expectations of life on this earth. You won't always be happy on this earth. You won't always get the girl that you want on this earth. You won't always have the job that you want on this earth. You won't always have the desires of your heart on this earth. There'll be times you want ice cream, you won't be able to have ice cream. We need to lower the expectations of life on this earth because life on this earth is but a blip on the radar. And we need to start living what we say we believe. We say that we look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the age to come. And if that's truly the case, then our lives need to start reflecting it. Because I bet you, this is saddens me to say, if you bring a Martian, okay, from Mars, okay, you bring a Martian down to this earth and you let him follow us around and say, these people, you tell me, are these people living for this world? Or are they awaiting one to come? I am scared of the answer that he would say. That if someone who didn't know anything about us followed us around for 2 weeks would say, no, these people, they don't believe in a world to come. They believe in a world here. They are building their kingdom right here. And they may say, we look for the resurrection, dead, and life of the age to come. But if you look at their lives, they act as if it's their purpose to have their desires met here. Okay? Follow me and I'll give you the desires of your heart. No, sir. Not from God. Not from God. That's one thing Jesus did not say. And every week we'll look at another thing Jesus didn't say. Anyone have any questions or comments or anything they want to add to the discussion, feel free to fire away. Okay. Thank you.